The federal government shutdown is over, and a U.S. default has been averted. After the Senate and the House passed a bill and President Obama signed it late last night that funds the federal government and increased the Treasury Department's borrowing power. We will welcome your reaction to the end of this showdown and what you want to see now as Congress turns its eye on the federal budget and reducing the federal debt. We welcome your questions, your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, October 17th. We are happy to have with us Mark Goldwin, Senior Policy Director of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. He guides and conducts research on a wide array of topics related to fiscal policy and the federal budget. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, first off, do you have a reaction to what that we are the federal government's open and we're not in default?
Well, I guess there's one piece of good news here, which is there's two pieces. We reopened the government and we avoided default. Those are absolutely necessary things that we should have done months ago, but thank goodness we didn't take this to the brink. Unfortunately, that's the only good thing I can say about this package. Mm-hmm. Every other part of it is just a kick-the-can move. That delays are important for tough decisions.
Yeah, well, how does it kick the can?
Well, this was supposed to be a discussion on how do we address the debt? How do we look at our tax code? How do we look at our entitlement programs? How do we make our country more economically sustainable? Instead, this became a discussion over whether we fund or defund Obamacare and over whether we do the basic things that Congress has to do every year, which is raise the debt so we don't default and fund the government so that it stays open.
So the whole Obamacare delay it a year and the showdown over that, you think was a big mistake?
It was a total distraction. And if you look at what is in this bill, there's one very minor change to Obamacare, basically to enforce something that's already in the law. Otherwise, it really does nothing. It does set up a conference committee, which is a chance for members of the House and Senate to work together on budget issues, but it does nothing to help our deficit. It doesn't fund the government even for the long term. It doesn't deal with this mindless sequester. It just gives us new deadlines in the end of December, the end of January, the middle of January, and early February.
So the sequester cuts are still in place and will remain in place?
That's right. So most of the sequester cuts, basically what this does is through January 15th, this continues all the sequester cuts from last year. What it doesn't do is activate an additional $20 billion of sequester cuts. That will come on January 15th if we don't take action before then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read that Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan and his counterpart in the U.S. Senate are sitting down maybe right now at a breakfast meeting starting to hammer out budget writing details and getting to work on this. So are you hopeful that the issues you want to see addressed will be addressed that way?
Well, look, I always remain hopeful, and I think that this budget conference is a great thing. It was over 5 months ago that Paul Ryan wrote and passed his budget in the House, and Patty Murray of Washington wrote and passed her budget in the Senate. Typically, when the House passes something and the Senate passes something, they then go to conference to reconcile it. They haven't done that yet, so I'm hopeful that now they're going to have that opportunity.
So, what do you want to see? What do you want to see in a new budget?
Well, so the way these budgets work is they really do two things. First, they set top line numbers, like how much are we going to spend on Medicare and how much are we going to raise in taxes. And second, they create what's called reconciliation instructions, which is sort of instructions to committees to save in a particular amount on a fast track basis. So what Penny Murray and Paul Ryan really need to do with their other colleagues is agree to these top lines and then set those instructions. And if they're doing their job right, understood within those top line numbers needs to be a replacement of sequestration with some smarter spending cuts, a call for comprehensive real tax reform that also brings in some more revenue, and some changes to really slow the growth of our entitlement programs.
Yeah. Well, the that real tax reform that includes revenue, that's going to be a, if this latest fight is any indication, that's going to be another one, isn't it?
But look, all of these things are controversial, but we have a real opportunity here. There's $1.3 trillion a year in tax preferences. These progressive preferences go disproportionately to the very wealthiest Americans. They distort economic decision-making. They put the government in the position of picking winners and losers. Neither Democrats nor Republicans particularly like them, or at least in the abstract, particularly like them. So there's an opportunity here to take that $1.3 trillion of tax preferences, put a lot of it into reducing our tax rates, but then put a small portion of it into helping to pay down our deficit.
Mm-hmm. And how do we slow the growth of entitlements?
There are two biggest entitlement programs, which are fastest growing, are Social Security and Medicare, with Medicaid as sort of a close third. On Medicare and Medicaid, a lot of what we need to do is just change the way we pay for health care. Incentives are wrong on all areas. Doctors and hospitals are paid more based on quantity of care instead of quality. We need to change that. Individuals don't really face first-dollar coverage often, but then they're also subject to risk of medical bankruptcy. We can change that. So I think on the healthcare side, a lot of it is just changing the incentives. On Social Security and to a certain extent Medicare, we need to address the fact that we're an aging population. And that means making adjustments to the retirement age. It means finding ways to bring in some more revenue, perhaps. And I think it means changing these formulas so that the wealthiest Americans who don't need them as much are getting a little less of a subsidy and less of a benefit relative to lower income Americans.
And what would be smarter than the sequestration cuts?
Well, the sequestration cuts are terrible in a number of ways. First of all, they're incredibly abrupt. Most of the deficit reduction happens in the first few years, and that's actually when the economy is weakest and deficit reduction can do the most harm. Whereas over the long run, deficit reduction is actually really good for the economy. Secondly, the sequestration is across the board. It's every program equally, except for those programs that are causing the problem, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And finally, sequestration ends in 2021, which means it doesn't do anything for the long term. So what can we do to make it replace with smarter cuts? We can look at targeted areas like agricultural subsidies, like airline fees, like double payments for Social Security, disability, and unemployment. And we can make cuts in those areas that are gradually phased in and targeted towards waste to get rid of these across-the-board cuts currently in effect.
We're talking with Mark Goldwyn. He is with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, talking with us about the deal reached last night that opens the federal government and avoids the default. It, for the most part, was a clean bill that had no strings attached. President Obama signed it, and we have an open government now and no default, at least not now. There is going to be, though, more deadlines coming up in early next year. We're talking about how we might put the nation on track to good financial ground with our guest, talking about the way the budget should be put together from Mark Goldwyn's perspective. And we're welcoming your reactions and your questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and we are in our fall membership drive. Your support is the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs on timely issues. We'll get back to our discussion about the federal budget in just a few minutes, but first, Bill is here to help make the case for you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio.
We've had a good morning so far, Joy. Last hour we heard from 32 listeners, so thank you very much for all of those pledges.
Excellent.
Our goal this hour is 55 pledges, so you can help us meet this goal by making a contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio thanks to your support.
On the Ideas Network, you hear from the person who wrote the bill or who wrote the book or who did the research. We are glad to seek out these people and get them on the show. We're privileged, in fact, to do so. But it's your support that makes this possible. Make great radio happen with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving takes just a few minutes of your time. Just tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. And when you use your credit card, it saves time, postage, and paper, and it puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, use the next few minutes to make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
One listener made a donation and said, "We couldn't live without WPR, but we..." I'm sorry, the quote is, "We could live without WPR, but we sure wouldn't want to." Maybe you feel the same way. Listening to WPR makes your life better.
Whether it's keeping up with international news, enjoying classical music, the laughs you get from the weekend shows, or the fascinating discussions here on the Ideas Network, there's always something good to listen to. Because WPR makes your life better, help fund it. Help keep it going. Your pledge of support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is very important.
You might think that you don't have to support Wisconsin Public Radio because somebody else is. After all, you've been listening for months, for years maybe, without making a pledge. So that's the proof, right? Well, WPR has been around for years because some remarkable people have made the decision to support something that's important to them.
Now it's time for you to make that decision. Your donation is important, and it does make a difference. Many first-time donors give $5 a month, but you choose what works best for you. Make your pledge of support. It's time at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio wakes me up every morning. Mostly I just enjoy the morning programming and the afternoon programming. I became a sustaining member because I felt so guilty with all the pledge drives, because they're so logical and they're so persistent. It's crucial that we have people support it so we don't lose it. I'm Sarah from Wausau. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can join Sarah by pledging at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Joy Cardine with Bill Martins asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall pledge drive. Maybe your gift is $10 or $15 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make a habit of donating. It's a good habit, a habit you're sure to be proud of. Get started today with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, we have three pledges in toward that 55 pledge goal for this hour. So help us reach this goal. Help fund the programs that you rely on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as an added incentive, get our travel mug when you give $15 a month or more. It says listener powered, which is, well, awfully true of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's got the WPR logo on it, stainless steel. It'll keep your coffee nice and warm. It's available at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Again, with your gift of $15 a month or more.
Thanks very much, Bill. We will talk to you later. Let's get back to our discussion about the federal budget. We are talking with Mark Goldwyn, Senior Policy Director of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. He guides and conducts research on a wide array of topics related to fiscal policy and the federal budget, talking with us about what's next now that the crisis is over, the default ceiling or the debt ceiling has been lifted temporarily, and the government has reopened. What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's take some calls. We have Tom in Appleton with us. Hello, Tom.
Hi. My comment is that the guest has fallen into an all too predictable pattern of talking about entitlements, programs that actually help people, and meanwhile, completely failing to talk about the rather large beast in the corner of the room, which is the Pentagon budget. It's sad to hear this go on and on, so-called experts, and just completely missing a very significant part of our financial difficulties. Well, I'll listen on the radio.
All right. Are we going to touch the Pentagon's budget, Mark?
Look, there's an incredible amount of waste in the defense budget, but we should be continuing to look to where we can cut weapon systems, where we can reduce troop levels in a way that still keeps our country safe, and finding other sorts of efficiencies. But the issue is with defense is sequestration already actually takes a very big hit out of defense. So we've cut defense and we've cut non-defense discretionary spending twice. Once through a set of caps that we agreed to in 2011, which I think were smart spending caps that put us on a road towards fiscal responsibility in those areas, but then a second time through this automatic sequestration. So my advice would actually be to repeal the sequestration, but keep some of those reductions in defense. But no matter how much we reduce defense, defense budget isn't growing. It is certainly expensive. We spend more in our military than the next 20 countries combined. There's room for cuts, but we can't change our growth trajectory from defense cuts alone because the defense budget simply isn't growing very fast.
Another call from Cody in Oshkosh. Hi, Cody.
Hi there. I think we need to change the rules of how we create a budget in the first place. Number one, the debt ceiling is unconstitutional. It should just be getting rid of. Number two, there should be a strict process of getting a budget with a schedule every year where on a set date, both houses have to come up with a budget. They have to go to conference. They have to harmonize their budgets. And on a certain date, they release a budget that the president must either consign or veto, I guess, or whether to start over. But that's my comment.
Well, why do you say, Cody, the debt ceiling is unconstitutional?
The Constitution requires the president to pay our debts no matter what. It would be real easy to overthrow it if it's ever taken to court. The states could sue the government right now and force it to go to the Supreme Court, and it would be thrown out.
Mark, a response to that?
Sure. Well, let me start with the budget process that you suggested, Cody, because I actually think it's a great one. And it's actually, for the most part, the process we have now. We just don't use it. The House and Senate are supposed to propose budgets by a fixed deadline, and then they are supposed to reconcile them by a fixed deadline. It's just that we've gotten into this habit of ignoring the rules. And because there's no consequences, there are no consequences. I'm heartened that we're actually moving back in the direction of regular order, at least on a temporary basis. But we do need to move to a place where we're actually following the rules of the Senate and the House. In terms of the debt ceiling, there have been some questions as to whether you could argue it's unconstitutional. This White House has ruled out using the 14th Amendment, and their lawyers don't believe that they would win in that case.
Remind us now, the deal that was signed last night, the bill that was signed last night, would the enforcement of the debt limit is suspended until February 7th. So this means that we could have another confrontation over this just before then?
That's exactly right. So this bill and the broader agreement sets two formal deadlines, and really three deadlines. The first is it said that we need to have a budget conference by mid-December. That's sort of a soft deadline, not enforceable. The second is the government funding goes only through January 15th, which means if we do nothing on January 16th, we're back in shutdown. And then the third is the debt ceiling rises only till February 7th, which means sometime shortly after that, we don't know exactly when, we would default if we didn't again raise the debt ceiling.
So do you think, though, I know you research budget policy, I'm still going to ask you this, do you think that Congress, and especially the Republicans who were insisting on you know, tying the funding or the implementation of the Affordable Care Act to this this bill have learned a lesson, and we're not going to do that again? I mean, the American people were pretty ticked off for the most part over this shutdown and this showdown.
You know, I really hope so. I mean, the irony is those opponents of Obamacare, not only did they get nothing out of this bill, but they missed 2 weeks of free media about how poorly the Obamacare website is going so far. I mean, had this not been a shutdown, all of the press, I think, would have been about how Obamacare is not working because of these website problems. And that would have been free press for Obamacare opponents, which they missed out on. So I think that it was just a huge strategic error. They were focused on the wrong thing, and they were willing to give up too much for it.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the federal budget and what happens next now that the crisis is over. And we wonder what you want to see happen. Are you hopeful about the economic future of the country? Do you approve of the deal that was reached? What do you want to see happen now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How do you think the U.S. should address the debt? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 7:36 on this Thursday. What is the date? It's Thursday, October the 17th. We'll get back to our discussion about hammering out a budget agreement now that the government's open in just a few minutes. But first, Bill Martins is with me to make the case for you to support Wisconsin Public Radio with a pledge during this fall membership drive. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make a pledge right now to support the programs that you count on.
We've got some work to do right now. We're looking for 49 more pledges in the next 35 minutes or so. So thank you to those of you who have already given. If you have not, help us stay on track by making your pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've heard one of our shows. That's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You will hear a wide variety of topics and multiple points of view. You value what you hear on the Ideas Network. Now, pledge your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR year-round. Now donate the same way you listen by becoming a sustaining member. Make the decision once and you'll make affordable contributions of, say, $10, $20 a month for as long as you wish.
It's easy on the budget and it cuts down on paperwork, so don't delay. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
You know, you can listen to WPR every day for years and you'll never get a bill. We don't count how many times you listen, and you know, we don't do something creepy like putting a meter on your radio.
We should think about that, though.
We should.
Instead, we use the honor system. We count on you to voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening that you do.
And remember, you decide how much WPR is worth to you. Whether it's a dollar or two a week or a dollar a day, you decide. Then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I don't think that people fully understand that Wisconsin Public Radio is really the basis from which it all began. I'm constantly telling people that you've got a tremendous resource here. You don't have to contribute. I mean, you can go ahead and take the service for free. I tell them, I contribute so you can listen. That always gets them. Here's this tremendous amount of information, which is commercial-free. It's annoyance-free, certainly. And I've got this terrible aversion to commercials, both on television and especially radio. I don't think the people really understand the value that you have right here just flipping on the radio.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during this fall membership drive. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and we will be here today and tomorrow during this show asking for your support, and then on Saturday, and then that's it. It's over. It's going to be done in just a few days. So if you're one of those listeners who waits until the last moment, we're getting close. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio station, and so do many others.
So make your pledge now for yourself and for the community. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
49 more pledges to go. We've got about 20 minutes until the hour ends. Your support makes the difference here at WPR. It makes all these great programs possible. Be part of making it happen by giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know we have a lot of people listening in the car right now, driving to work. So, hello, drive safely. And maybe you can't call right now, but once you stop, you can pull over and pull out the phone and go to 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And, you know, you can, for $15 a month, a sustaining membership of $15 a month, we have the new WPR travel mug. It's yours for that pledge of $180 a year. It's a handy, nice reminder of how much you enjoy Wisconsin Public Radio. You can listen to the show, and you can drink your coffee in your travel mug on your way to work at the same time. So consider that as your thank you gift for your pledge of $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help us reach that goal by 8 o'clock.
Thank you very much, Bill. We're going to get back now to our discussion about the federal budget. Late last night, after it passed the Senate and the House, President Obama signed a bill that reopens the federal government and avoids default. For the most part, it's a bill that he wanted all along. It does not have any strings attached when it comes to Obamacare, for example. But we do have more deadlines coming up. Some sort of budget agreement has to be hammered out by early January or mid-January, and we have another debt ceiling coming up in February as well. So we are talking with a guest about this, about hammering out some sort of budget agreement. Mark Goldwyn is a senior policy director of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. And I'm looking at an editorial or a piece you wrote, Mark, that says that a lot of people think that the debt problem is a myth. And you're saying that, you know, Democrats think that it's kind of taken care of now, and even Republicans think it's not maybe as serious as it used to be because we're seeing some, you know, reductions as the economy gets better.
We have made some real improvements to the deficit. Some of them were always going to happen as the economy recovered, and actually they're coming later than what we had hoped. And some of them are due to real spending cuts in revenue we've made along the way. For example, the caps from the Budget Control Act and the revenue from the fiscal cliff deal. My concern is, while all what we've done improves the short-term situation, it really hasn't changed our debt trajectory at all. So while things might look a little more stable from, say, now to 2017, after that, we're in the same exact path as before, but with less impetus to actually do something about it.
You wrote, there is a dangerous and pervasive myth in Washington that our debt problems have been solved, that we no longer need to worry about growing entitlement costs. This myth leads many Democrats on the left to falsely assume that any call for deficit reduction is a call for job-killing austerity. And you're saying that you're not calling for job-killing austerity, Mark?
No, look, that's exactly what sequestration is, which is the wrong way to reduce the deficit. We don't need to worry about the 2013 and 2014 deficits. In fact, those are lower than they need to be. We can actually ease up on them a little bit by reducing sequestration. Where the problem is the 2017 deficit, the 2025 deficit, the 2035 deficit, and we can make gradual changes today. It isn't going to cut so much as it's just going to slow the growth and increase the growth of various things. And it won't have the same austerity effect of the short-term deficit reduction, which mistakenly we've pursued through the sequestration so far.
Mm-hmm. And you wrote that Republicans on the right have shifted their focus away from entitlement reform to oil pipelines and medical device taxes?
I thought one of the most unfortunate things, you know, hostage taking on the debt ceiling is incredibly dangerous, and hostage taking over a shutdown, although not dangerous, is really unwise. But what was really disheartening is Republicans weren't even fighting for lower spending levels. It wasn't even about the budget numbers. It wasn't even about the debt. It was about Obamacare, which is sort of a secondary issue. And I worry that because of this temporary stability in the debt, folks on the right have lost their perspective on what the real problem is, and that's our growing entitlement cost.
Chris on Facebook says, I think we came out of the deal not too badly, and we didn't undo the Budget Control Act. The Democrats own their law now, and we are still able to have talks on reducing spending. I would have liked to have seen more done on Obamacare, like undoing the exemptions that Obama made for unions, businesses, and such. So, Chris, I take it Chris is coming from the right there, saying, what's your response to that?
Well, look, it's true that we kept in place a sequestration. That is a spending cut. But if you're a Republican that really cares about cutting our spending, sequestration is about the worst way to do it. First of all, half of it's from defense. Second of all, it's incredibly abrupt. And third of all those spending cuts end in 2021. It does nothing for the long term. We'd be far better off replacing some of the sequestration, even though it means a spending increase this year, with real entitlement changes that are going to grow and compound over time, actually are going to help to grow the economy and make our entitlement programs more sustainable.
Michael on Facebook says, so instead of cutting the size and scope of the federal government, the players in D.C. have agreed to borrow another $1 trillion to pay off the $1 trillion they already borrowed. Okay. Is that what happened?
Well, it's not exactly mathematically the right description, but what we have done is continue to kick the can and continue to let our borrowing increase without any discussion of how we could slow that increase over time. And I think that was a wasted opportunity, to say the least.
And now lots of comments on Facebook here. James on Facebook says, would you agree to cutting spending by reducing corporate welfare to zero, or does cutting just mean taking hard-earned benefits from those who spent a lifetime contributing?
Oh, my God. There is an incredible amount of corporate welfare, some of the spending side, but a lot in the tax code. I mentioned that we had $1.3 trillion of tax expenditures. About 10% of that is tax preferences that go to corporations for anything from faster depreciation schedules to special deductions and credit. We need to take a really serious look at all of these tax preferences and subsidies. I'm not sure down to zero, because, of course, some of these could have economic value. But me personally, I would get rid of almost all of the corporate tax preferences and use a lot of that money to reduce rates and some to reduce the deficit.
John in Green Bay called. He couldn't hang on the line. He says he is automatically renewed in his certificate of deposit program by his bank, and the budget and the debt ceiling could operate in the same way. They should just be automatically renewed?
I worked for Erskine Mullins and Al Simpson, and actually one of the proposals they came up with is to index the debt ceiling to the economy, to GDP. And what that would mean is, so long as we were on a sustainable debt trajectory, we wouldn't have to go through these fights. Unfortunately, we're not on a sustainable debt trajectory, which is why, if we're careful, I think that things like the debt ceiling can at least get us to focus on the debt issues. Now, we cannot do that by threatening default. That's completely unacceptable. But I do think there is a value to forcing our policymakers to actually focus on the debt at least once in a while.
Well, Mark, as we're kind of winding up here, and I do appreciate, by the way, the fact that you're able to join us kind of on short notice. A lot of people are wondering, you know, with this partisan divide going on in Congress, whether we can indeed find a common ground for, you know, finding some sort of budget agreement that's going to avoid this from happening, you know, in a few months. The your particular committee, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, would you say that you are that common, what you're proposing is the common ground?
Look, yeah, I've worked with Democrats and Republicans in the Senate and the House, and they've all been able to find ways to come to an agreement. We just can't get at the leadership level. the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget and our Fix the Debt campaign convenes people of a wide array of ideological views from far left to far right, small business folks, CEOs, religious leaders, and just ordinary Americans, students, teachers, and they disagree on a lot of things, but at least they agree that we have a problem, and they agree that they're willing to put the things they care about on the table if it's part of a solution to it.
Yeah, well, the president last night when he signed said that he thought that with people sitting down right away to try to hammer out some sort of budget agreement, he thought that by year's end, not only would we have a new budget, but we could have immigration reform and a new farm bill. Are you that optimistic?
Well, I'll say it's an important start. I'm not going to declare victory based on two people sitting down having breakfast. But considering we haven't even had a budget conference since 2009, I think this is a good start.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Mark Goldwin is a senior policy director of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. He guides and conducts research on a wide array of topics related to fiscal policy and the federal budget. You know, we're going to talk more about the politics of what happened and where we go from here. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be welcoming in UW-Milwaukee governmental affairs professor Mordecai Lee. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up in our next hour, we will welcome in language expert Richard Lederer, and we will talk about all things language related. Joining me now is Bill Martins, because this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive, and we are asking you to invest a few minutes of your time for lots of great radio listening. We are asking for your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if we reach our goal this hour, we'll take that bit of snow out of the forecast.
Yeah,
that'd be kind of nice,
it.
Wouldn't it? Seriously, though, we're looking for 46 more pledges in the next 7 minutes. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you depend on all year long. So thank you if you have already given. If you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We always try to talk about a timely issue during this 7 to 8 o'clock hour. We talk about the issue of the day. Maybe it's something going on at the state capitol. Maybe it's something going on in our nation's capital, as it was today. We just talked about the deal that was reached last night. So our federal government reopens. And now, though, some budget cutting has to start. And we were talking about where to go from here. So take a few minutes now to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You get value from the Joy Cardine Show and also the Kathleen Dunn Show. Garden Talk, A Prairie Home Companion, and many others you've come to rely on. WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. Support the exciting mix of shows you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're pretty sure that the programs you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio make a difference in your life, because if you're listening right now, it's a good bet that you listen most every day. During our fall membership drive, we are asking you to make a difference to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Your gift of whatever amount you choose, say $5 a month or $10 a month, $15 a month, makes a difference in what you hear and look forward to every day. That's because we rely on listener support for the single largest piece of our budget. So make that difference right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is Michelle Norris from NPR News. It's fundraising time. We've worn you down. You finally decided to give, but you're still undecided about how much to give. Well, here's a suggestion. Think about becoming a sustaining giver at just $10 a month. It's billed to your credit card, it renews automatically, and you can stop anytime you want. Then, no matter when you tune into your station, you know that you're doing your part. And no matter when a fund drive comes around, you can listen guilt-free. Join as a sustaining supporter of your station today. Just $10 a month. Here's how.
Here's how. You can go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your contribution. Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and we are asking for your pledge to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. You decide how much to pledge. Maybe you can pledge $5 a month or $100 a month. Anything is appreciated. Every gift is needed.
Help pay for the programs you depend on. We are looking for 46 more pledges by 8 o'clock, so there's not much time left. And if you pledge $15 a month at least, $180 a year, ask for the WPR stainless steel travel mug by Clean Canteen that features the Wisconsin Public Radio logo and says listener powered on it. Keep your coffee nice and warm on your way to work in the morning as you're listening to the Joy Cardine Show. But you got to make that pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Sharon from Madison, who did pledge. She says, I listen all day, and I want you to continue bringing the great shows into my home. Well, that'll help, Sharon. Thank you very much. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, maybe you donated a few years ago, and you feel like you've done your part, but you enjoy listening to WPR year after year. Well, your continued support is what keeps this organization strong.
Has it been a while since you donated? Well, this is a perfect time then to rejoin at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. So maybe you're a first-time pledger. Maybe you're renewing. Maybe it's been a while, you're lapsed, and you're rejoining. Or maybe you want to increase your pledge. We welcome that pledge of any amount for any reason at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just a couple of minutes left to go, and we're looking for 45 more pledges to reach that goal this hour. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And don't forget to ask for your Wisconsin Public Radio stainless steel travel mug when you make that pledge of at least $15 a month. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can do that $15 a month to get the travel mug by becoming a sustaining member. We really appreciate our sustainers, members who give Wisconsin Public Radio such reliable monthly support. If you are already a sustainer, thank you so very much. You can make today the day that you increase your support of Wisconsin Public Radio by $5 a month or whatever amount you choose. Or you can just go ahead and sign up to be a sustaining member and do that $15 a month pledge to get the travel mug. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All you procrastinators out there, we have just a couple days left in this pledge drive. And if you've kind of been sitting around the last couple of days, haven't made that pledge, this is a great time to do it. And then you won't have to feel that pressure on the last day. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Bill Martins. Thank you, Christy Taylor. Thank you, Robin Cherry, my producers of this program. And thank you, dear listeners, for your support.